This is the Agile Thoughts Podcast, and I'm Lance Kine.
Hi, so I'm Al Shalloway. I'm CEO and owner of Success Engineering, and basically, as far as relevance to y'all listening, I ran Net Objectives for 20 years, where we were a consulting company and did design patterns work, and then I went into the PMI for two, three years, building the discipline Agile Value Stream Consultant, and I'm now at Success Engineering, my own new company.
This is the first episode of a series about Al Shalloway's Amplio. Al Shalloway is the founder and CEO of Success Engineering and the lead designer of Amplio. He has been a thought leader in the Agile space before the Agile Manifesto and was asked to attend its 10-year anniversary because of his work with XP, Design Patterns, Scrum, Lean, and Kanban. As a former gold sponsor SPCT and contributor to SAFE, Mr. Shalloway is familiar with the most popular Agile methods. He is the main creator of PMI's Discipline Agile Value Stream Consultant Workshop. He is currently breaking new ground in more effective training, consulting, and ongoing support methods. He is doing this by working with top consultants and making them better. Hey, Al, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me here.
Do you have any story to share about the manifesto? Like maybe you either near misses or you're there or I noticed you're talking about a bunch of work before it happened. So,
well, yeah. And I'm not sure I'd say I was a thought leader before it happened, but I was on the edge with XP and Scrum early on. I had a lot to do with having studied design patterns in the late 90s and having been a thought leader in design patterns. And I've written a book or two on that. I was one of the first people to talk about not test first, that had been done, but why test first worked as a kind of design. But yeah, actually, I'm one of the few people who've never signed the Agile Manifesto, and this will be my story, why I never signed it. There's a particular 7 words in the Agile Manifesto. It's the first value, individuals and interactions over processes and tools. And I think I got to explain why I didn't sign that and what I won't say I predicted what would happen, but I knew it would be a problem. And I had started studying Toyota and Lean and Deming in the late 80s or mid 80s. And I had also studied Peter Senge, John Gall, and since late, more recently, Russ Acuff and Ellie Goldratt about systems thinking. And systems thinking, even by 2001, I'm just a big believer in systems thinking, which is basically that the system, the environment you're in, has a huge impact on you. And this has been said lots of ways. A bad environment will kill a good person, will stop them from being effective. So I know the intention of the individuals and interactions over processes and tools. And I agree with that. I agreed with the intention. But it's stating it as if these are opposed to each other. So what they really meant is bad process, or process that's imposed, or rules. But I kind of think of it in a broader picture, workflow. How are you doing things? And it's not just the environment you're in. It's also, you could say, are you following what are called first principles, like delays cause waste. Local improvements may not translate to global improvements. So these are kind of the physics of flow, I've heard them described. And I knew that put up this conflict, even though the intention was don't have to do P+, which I had. I'd survive that. So I knew what they meant, and I agreed with what they meant, but it wasn't clear. And I talked about its individuals, interactions, and processes and tools, meaning you need the processes and tools that support you. And I remember Don Reinertsen said, no, it's not and, it's multiplied by. So I like that. I said, yeah, go for it, Don. And, Don, to me, is one of the top 2 or 3 thought leaders in the whole space. And what he meant was that these two are synergistic. If they're bad, it multiplies the wrong way. If they're good, it multiplies the right way. But people have to improve their process. And I want to say, I know there's a little bit long on this first one, but I want to say why this is coming to, no pun intended, manifest itself in today's space. There are lots of different levels of things you have to do and things you need to be allowed to do. For example, you should be allowed to figure out how to run your team process or something like that. But you shouldn't necessarily be allowed to not code in a quality manner. You should be allowed to have your team work and reflect on the way they want to and how they interact and maybe use the tools you want. But on the other hand, you have to live within the constraints of the organization. You might want to do Java, but if you're in a Microsoft shop or vice versa, you can't pick the tool. There are viable constraints. If you're in a, say, healthcare field, you don't have any choice but to follow the regulations about not disseminating patient information. So what you need to do is be able to pick and choose what lives within the viable constraints, the valid constraints. But you don't get to do everything. And we see this happening. We see that this ignoring that there are different areas of what you can choose and what you can't choose. So like when Scrum came out and got popular, because it predated all this, coming out in 95, the reality was XP was more popular before Scrum from 1999 to 2001. But all the people who were willing to do pair programming and test first, they dried up quick because I was teaching them that. And very soon it was like, oh, well, we like this idea of Agile, but we don't want to pair and we don't want to test first. So I started teaching them Scrum, as lots of other people did. And maybe it was an early sellout, but it's what happened. And what happened, though, is that everything became optional. Yeah, you get to do what you want, and it's optional. And it was very frustrating because I saw people not attending to quality code. And people would look at how it was done badly, and they would say, well, look, it's so hard to do it right. And the answer is no. It's hard to do it right when you don't know how to do it right. This whole idea, well, you don't have time for the quality, and it's just BS. If you know how to program, you program faster, right up front, not later on. Everybody says, oh, later on. No, right up front. But it takes a different kind of thinking. And I think this loose wording has a lot to do with this. No, you can get, you don't get to choose everything. You get to live with the constraints of the laws of physics, the laws of quality code, and the constraints of your organization. And within those constraints, you get to do how you want to do it. And the organization should not be imposing arbitraries. Here's how you do things. So that's my Agile manifesto story. And then I got some other things that I'm sure will come up.
Yeah, cool.
As we talk.
Yeah. So now I believe you were part of a early podcast in that, or in those XP days.
Well, I'm not sure podcast. What happened is in 99, I still can't remember what conference I went to. There was a conference in Munich in 99 that I went to. And that's when I got introduced to XP via Martin Fowler. Unfortunately, the class was full, so I couldn't get in. Oh. But it was such a buzz. I mean, it's like, oh, did you hear about XP? And I said, no, tell me about XP. What happened, and do not misinterpret me. I am not saying I did XP before XP came out. I was not doing it. But I was doing every single practice in XP before it came out. And my reaction was, oh, my God, this is so clearly good. Why didn't I ever put these things together? I mean, I had envy here. I was like, oh, duh, these 12 things. I've done each of these, but I had done them individually. I hadn't done them all together. So I was an immediate convert, and I immediately could explain why they work because I had been doing them. So I was early in the sense there was the XP programming group on Yahoo at the time, which was where everybody was hanging out, including the Scrum folks. Ken Schwaber was there. And it was really going hot for a couple of years, and then we had the dot-com bust, and then it turned out, like I said, people didn't want to pair. Pairing was the big thing. And in those days, it was like, no, you're supposed to follow things. Look, you don't need to pair and do XP. Well, it won't be XP. But you don't need to pair, although I think pairing is awesome. You don't need to do pair to do something very much like XP well. And in fact, what I would convey to people is different degrees of it. If you look at the Myers-Briggs, I'm what's called the dot NTJ. That means I'm not an I, not introverted thinking, or extroverted thing. I go back and forth between the two. Okay, I'm that's just how I am. And for me, sometimes I like pairing. People who know me know I like to talk. But when I'm working, I just sometimes don't bug me. This was actually a strain on my wife and my relationship. We've been together like 37 years and really as deeply in love as we've ever been. But I can remember times when I was this effusive guy, and then I said, don't bug me. And we're like, what happened? What did I do wrong? and I finally realized it was my mindset. That sometimes I got to talk to think, and sometimes, because that's what I and E, it doesn't mean how you are introverted or extroverted, it means how you think. And sometimes I think best talking, and sometimes I think best not talking.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really keen at the beginning. I was, I think, the first person who said that testing up front is a kind of design. I remember getting a lot of flack for that. And I talked about the code quality testability. I said that when code is testable, in other words, it's easy to test. If you actually design your code to be easy to test, you get all the good code qualities like strong cohesion, encapsulation, you know, loose coupling. And so I was trying to explain test up front is a design process. Now, a lot of people, of course, know this now, but back in 2000, that was...
Yeah.
Test first, you got to be crazy. You got to write the code first. I say, no, you're writing your test first. You're not running your test first. Well, of course, you run your test red, green for those of you out there. But I mean, it's the interesting thing is that you're actually looking at how the hell am I going to figure out what this thing is doing? Well, I better specify that. By the way, here's what I call test-driven development level zero.
Yeah.
Takes no extra work. Will save you time a lot. When somebody asks you to do something, you ask them, and how will I know I've done that? Very simple, but you'd be shocked. Even when you know absolutely the answer, asking that question, and how will I know I've done that? Sometimes you discover you didn't know what they meant, and sometimes you discover that's a miscommunication, and it very often leads to interesting conversations, and there's like no overhead to it, because what if they say, well, you'll know it when this happens, and you do it? You wasted a minute.
Right. No, that's something that a fellow in our organization has been pushing the consultants to be better at, because they will be given some direction and then, you know, being, how do I say, the go-getters, they go try to execute on that direction. And then they realize, like within 5-10 minutes, like, you know, we're really not sure what done looks like. And we each of us have a different imagination of what done looks like. And so then we have to run back and find that person and say, hey, wait a minute. But yeah, it's proactively done, it's really smooth in the flow. Like it. Agile Grande teaches you systems thinking through dramatic storytelling, such as Carter takes a job to improve a logistics company's adaptability, but efforts to scale agile practices are being blocked by Mr. Chernesky, a vice president who's organized the company into siloed pigeonholes in order to secretly make millions with a dark web shipping service. Carter's life is in danger. He goes underground, and a spy agency hunts for him. When Carter uses systems thinking, systems modeling, and organizational change to save his company and his life, you get to learn how to apply that to your organization as well. Get your free copy of Agile Grande at leanpub.com. Check out the show notes. They have links back to useful things about Amplio and other things that Al Shalloway has been up to. What are show notes? Show notes shoot right into your podcast player for your easy access every time you load a podcast show like this one. But if you're using a web browser and downloading the MP3s, go back to the page that you downloaded the MP3 from, and there you will see the show notes. Next episode, more Al Shalloway.
So I built the Discipline Agile Value Stream Consultant as an integration of lean, flow, theory of constraints, and how you would be a consultant looking at the entire value stream. But that's really, I think, where the future is a way of having, and I'll talk about that a little later too, because I haven't given up on this. But that's what we need, is methods that are scale-free, that can work at all levels, consistently driving from the same principles. But those principles aren't in the Agile Manifesto.